Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
The Athletic.
The Champions League is back, and to be fair, so is the Europa League, Man United fans, which means there's no better time to sign up for all the unrivaled coverage at The Athletic. Right now, new subscribers can get a half-price annual subscription that works out less than £1 a week for an entire year. All you have to do is head to theathletic.com/totally. But hurry, you've only got until the 25th of February. That's theathletic.com/totally.
Totally Football Show, European edition. Champions League is back. From Barcelona to Budapest, we get the picture on four big fixtures, plus Europa League, why Dortmund have picked a Rosa, and how Milan lost to the Spezia one. It's all coming up in this Totally Football Show European edition in association with Paddy Power. It's Tuesday, the 16th of February, listener. Thank you so much for joining us. With us on the Totally Football Show European edition, as ever, Alvaro Romeo. Kaixo.
Kaixo, how are you?
Kaixo, how are you?
Very well, thank you.
Great. Julien Laurent, you look well.
Bonjour, you too, James.
Ah, merci. James Horncastle, hello.
How do, James?
Yeah, very well, thanks. And Raphael Honigstein.
Hello, James.
Yes. Raf has excited everybody for the return of European football in random stadiums. It's a bit like when game makers can't license the real grounds, so they just kind of stick them in other kind of...
I preferred that. I love the Pro Evo version of football, you know, Chamartin, you know, playing. That's what I like.
Okay, but I'm sure you're going to like this week as well with games in some of the great European footballing cities, but also Budapest as well as the likes of Rome and Turin. Interesting. 16 teams in action in the Champions League. This week we've got on Tuesday Barcelona taking on Paris Saint-Germain, Leipzig against Liverpool, and then on Wednesday Porto against Juventus and Sevilla against Dortmund, which could be interesting. Next week it's the other eight. So that's Atletico Madrid, Chelsea, Lazio, Bayern, Atalanta against Real and Borussia Mönchengladbach against Man City. Who's your favourites? Who's your dark horses at this point before we get back underway? Alvaro.
On the basis of what I've seen, Manchester City is my favorite to win the Champions League right now because they are in a top form in the English top flight and also in English football because they don't stop winning in the FA Cup, in the League Cup. So, yeah, that will be definitely my favorite. And regarding the underdog, it's a little bit more difficult to see one. Maybe RB Leipzig could be one of those, but can we consider them underdogs after having reached the semi-final a year ago? I don't think so.
Interesting question. Rafa thinks they're underdogs in the clash with Liverpool, certainly Tuesday evening. Would anyone disagree with Alvaro's description of Man City as the favourites?
No, but I think they were favourites 2 years ago when they were putting up 100 points or more in the Premier League and they couldn't do it that time. And also last year when it felt like they could focus on the Champions League because Liverpool was so far ahead. Again, it didn't happen for them either. So... it's not to say it won't happen. It's just, you know, as with PSG, there's something to be said about having sort of this competition in your DNA. And so far, it just hasn't really happened for either of those two clubs. Sorry, Jules.
But you're right, though. And I just wonder if at some point, even if they were ahead in the league, if all that history and that troubled history with the Champions League could come back and haunt them or make it harder for them to...
Which club are you talking about, Jules?
Both of them, but especially City, because they never even got to the final. But I don't know. I just think it's not that easy when you get to those big games in especially now that we're back on two legs. I think Bayern Munich will still be very strong. And I'm not sure if City right now are more favourites than Bayern Munich, for example. I still think that Atletico Madrid, and they can't be dark horses because they're too good. I'm not sure they can be as full favourite as City or Munich, but they certainly could be there and around again, because I think they might be able to focus purely on the Champions League, because the league at some point, and that could be soon, could be won. So I think it's quite interesting, like we've been saying from the beginning, because of this very special season, I think it's quite open.
Mm. Bayern Munich, of course, freshly crowned champions of the world. Statistically, it's likely to be a Spanish side that wins it. Gazeta pointing out on Sunday that since Inter picked up the last trophy for an Italian side in 2010, under Jose Mourinho, of course, Spain has beaten Italy in terms of cup wins 26-0. In fact, of the 42 cups assigned since 2010, Spain has won more than half, 26 of them for Spain, only 7 for England and 6 for Germany, and none whatsoever for Italy. Wow, that's extraordinary.
It is, and I think that all things considered, Spanish teams, they will still be competitive. But between 2011 and 2016, I think that there were always two Spanish teams in the semifinals. And that was the golden time of Spanish football, I would say, with Atletico and Real Madrid playing an all-Spanish finals in 2014 and 2016. But the last Spanish club in the Champions League semifinal was Barcelona losing at Anfield. So, and that happened almost 2 years ago. So I don't think that the Spanish clubs can consider themselves more favourites right now than any other countries. However, it's true that normally when it comes to playing in Europe, they show a competitive edge. And last season it was disappointing for Spanish clubs in the Champions League, yes, but Sevilla won the Europa League.
Indeed so. All right, well, we'll look ahead at the prospects in the Champions League and the other one in the course of today's show. First of all, though, let's catch up a little bit on what were the moments of this weekend with Paddy Power. Rafa, what's been your moment of the weekend?
I think the moment of the weekend came on Monday, James, if that still counts.
Every day it's is when, weekend.
Yeah, it's when Marco Rose's move to Borussia Dortmund was confirmed, around about 20 past two. Badly kept secret, but still very sensitive timing, because the two of them are in action in the Champions League. The two of them will be up against each other in 2 weeks' time in the German Cup in the quarterfinal. So it's a difficult one, I think, to get right timing-wise, but the situation had become a little bit distracting, because Rose's first question he had to answer at every single press conference, every post-match game is, are you going to Dortmund? Are you going to Dortmund? Are you going to Dortmund? And I think they had no option but to come clean in that respect.
Rafi, why did this always happen in Germany? You know, it's always before a big game, you know, like Bayern due to play Dortmund. Bayern announced that they're signing Mario Götze or Robert Lewandowski. Or more recently, Bayern about to play RB Leipzig, or Leipzig have a sort of big game. They're very much in the title race. We're signing Upamecano. It just always seems to come out just when it seems to be a pivotal moment for the team that is losing a talent.
Well, we'll come back to that one, Raf. Let's get James's moment of the weekend first.
Well, I suppose it's got to be Spezia. The firemen of Spezia pouring cold water on Milan's title challenge, because Milan went to play them on Saturday night. They got beaten handsomely. In fact, it could have been worse. It was one of the best performances we've seen against them this season, along with the one that Atalanta put in at San Siro. And it means that Inter had their opportunity to overtake them on Sunday, and take it they did. And it feels like a very pivotal moment in the title race, James. So I think we'll get to it a little bit later, but we'll be saluting Vincenzo Italiano, Vinny Italian, for being I think we've already spoken about him as being one of the most promising young managers coming through in Italian football at the moment.
Absolutely. Milan having worse results with Italiano since Luis Suarez went to Perugia that time. Jules, what's your moment of the weekend?
He passed.
I think it has to be just before the weekend, and the Neymar injury in the French Cup against Caen, a game that maybe he didn't have to play, but he certainly got injured, which means that he will miss the game against Barcelona first leg, very likely the second leg as well. And once again, when those key games come, he's not there for PSG.
Right. We'll hear much more about that story. Alvaro, what's your moment of a whatever time period suits you?
I think that the moment of the week was the fantastic goal that Lionel Messi scored from outside the box on Saturday evening. That was important for Barcelona just to consolidate themselves in Champions League spots. Alaves lost 5-1 against them. And maybe more generically speaking, the fact that the Spanish teams are ready, Sevilla, Atletico, Real Madrid, Barcelona, they are all winning comfortably lately, and they have such a difference between themselves and the fifth on the table that they can focus on the Champions League.
Interesting. Well, we'll be starting off our roundup of the midweek games with one of those sides, Barcelona, and their clash with Paris Saint-Germain.
The Totally Football Show European Edition's Moment of the Weekend, brought to you by Paddy Power. Defences may be looking shaky at the moment, but Paddy's offers are rock solid. If one leg of your 4-plus fold ACCA lets you down, get a free bet. Max free bet £10, minimum odds 1 to 5 per leg. Online exclusive, no shop bets. T's and C's apply. 18 plus, begambleaware.org.
Attention. Dessus! No!
Possible! C'est pas possible! C'est pas possible!
Yes, it's the Champions League comeback the Catalans do like to talk about. The one where Barcelona lose 4-0 in Paris, then win 6-1 at the Camp Nou. 4 years on from that historic night, Barca PSG all over again. Jules, are you ready to go again?
Yeah, of course. I am. I think I'm even more ready than PSG themselves because they're not playing well at all. They won at the weekend against Nice, but it was a bad performance. They certainly didn't deserve to win the game. They don't have Neymar and Angel Di Maria, who have been their two best players in 2021 so far. So it's a tough time. I think Pochettino has done some good things since arriving, but there's a lack of time for him to work on some of the ideas that he has with this squad. There's the issue with Kylian Mbappe and his contract and his future and also his own personal form. So I think there's a lot of worrying signs for PSG before going to Barcelona on Tuesday. It's not at all where they would have liked to be before such a big game.
But Jules, one of those worrying signs isn't Moise Kean. He should keep scoring for PSG. It's 10 goals in Liga. He should be starting. I mean, it's in some respects a blessing that Neymar is injured because finally they'll have someone who, in Ken, just always seems to do the job for them.
Yeah, but you can score against against Caen in the French game.
This is Ligue 1, Jules. This is Ligue 1. It's one of the most difficult leagues in the world and he's scoring regularly in it. I mean, come on.
It's still different to score against Barcelona, albeit without any of their centre defenders, pretty much. But Kane will be an asset, I guess. It's just how strong collectively they will be. That's, for me, that's the key, because individually you can have an incredible moment if you're Marco Verratti or Mario Cardi or Kylian Mbappe, like Messi or Griezmann or Dembele can have one as well. But it's how strong collectively. For me, the strongest team collectively will win this tie over the two legs. And I'm just not sure right now. I don't think this Barca team is a very good team, but I still think that right now they're better collectively from what we've seen in the last few games, even in the defeat against Sevilla, than what we've seen from PSG under Pochettino in the last three games.
Interesting, because Pochettino is usually all about that collective strength. Icardi and Kane playing up front in the absence of Neymar, and Mbappe, of course, available. Icardi and Kane combining well at the weekend in the victory over Nice. That time in 2016, sorry to bring it up again, but that was the third time in five seasons that Barcelona had knocked Paris Saint-Germain out of the Champions League. Am I right in saying it was the worst night in Paris Saint-Germain's history, Jules?
The 2017, you mean?
Sorry, 2017, yeah.
Yeah. It would be the worst team in any club's history. I mean,
didn't they make like a Faustian pact that night, Barca, and that coming back, it means that they've had to suffer subsequent remontadas themselves every year since then.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, this is the thing.
If that was the worst night in the club's history, facing Barcelona across these two legs, how big is it for Paris Saint-Germain?
Yeah, it's huge. And certainly there's a huge desire of getting one back or having some sort of revenge. It doesn't have to be as spectacular as that night. And I mean, we can come back on that night. I think everything that could have gone wrong for PSG, including, I don't even know how to qualify the referee's performance on that night, but it's true that then they won. Good, they scored 6 goals. Good for them. You know what Suarez did, and etc. I don't know. But yeah, so of course, I think they want to show that they can also beat them over two legs. But certainly, I think it would be a scar forever.
Quite cruel for you to ask this question, James. Jules, given that PSG managers tend to be judged on their Champions League performances, is this a game that will already shape what kind of reign Pochettino will be experiencing, or is it a little bit too early and he'll be given some slack considering he's only just come in a couple of months ago?
Yeah, I think you're right. It's a good question. I think it's a bit early still. He only arrived at the beginning of Jan and then this game arrived so quickly. What I find really interesting, it won't be judged whether they win or lose unless they lose 5-5, and then you're like, okay, right, there's clearly something wrong. But the injuries obviously are already an excuse in a sense. If they were to lose, he will say, well, Di Maria and Neymar were not there in the first leg. This was problematic, which it is, to be fair. But I like the fact that he's such an Espanyol guy that I want to believe that his history with Espanyol is so strong for when he played there to start with, over 300 games as a player, as a captain, then as a manager, what he did there, the ideology almost against Barcelona, as in FC Barcelona, I want to believe that there's something in there for him to exploit with these PSG players, with what this game means to him as well. Because as much as he can say, you know what, I've just arrived a month ago, this defeat is not on me, I want to believe that for him, as a former Espanyol player and Espanyol manager, to go and face Barcelona in such a big competition and knock them out, for example, would be very special. So I want to hope that there's something there that he can use to make this game even more special.
Plus, of course, he's got that rivalry with Ronald Koeman as kind of former Southampton managers, you know, who can have the edge. Will they be wearing that jersey again at the Camp Nou, the kind of pink-blue art project affair that they had on against Nice?
No, not this time. That was that's the fourth kit that they've just released, the Jordan 1. If you haven't seen it, it's really bright pink and dark colors. I'm a big fan personally. So I think the shirt is a bit brash, I give you that. The rest of the range, so the jumpers, the hoodies are really, really cool. I have to say the trainers, the Air Jordan trainers are really, really cool. Air Jordan 1s with a purple color, it's really cool.
Nice to know. No Neymar, as you mentioned. He's got injured in that cup game against Caen. This means that it's the sixth year, if he's out for a month, as seems to be the current forecast, that this is going to be the sixth year out of the last seven that he won't be available on the 11th of March, which is his sister's birthday. Now, I know this is a coincidence, but there are cynical folk, Jules, who will say, what's going on? Seriously, suspended in 2015, suspended in 2016, 17, 18, 19 injured. In fact, in terms of the last 16, he's missed all but one of those seasons. Extraordinary, no?
Yeah, I agree with Alvaro. I think there's the bad luck to start. I don't think he gets suspended or injured on purpose to go to his sister's birthday. And anyway, this year there won't be any birthday for her anyway, like for him. So,
or really?
There will be a birthday for her. It'll just be in isolation, no?
Yeah, but you can't have the party.
Have a party at Christmas.
There was not much of a party on New Year's Eve, you mean?
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't think so.
Anyway,
certainly not that he was there. But I think that's not the way I want to see it. The way I want to see it is that PSG spent all that money on him, so they were hoping to go far in Europe. If your best player is out every single year, you know, without being his fault, because it's not his fault if it's not his fault. He gets injured. You can always argue, like people have done in France, about his lifestyle, and maybe there's a point where your body can't take it anymore. Not long ago, he gave an interview on French television when he said, like, I will never stop partying because people should party. Party is life, party is this, party is that. Maybe there's a point where even if he parties less this year than he's ever done before, maybe there's a point where your body can't take it anymore, and that's where the injuries are more likely to come. I don't know.
Parties is injury prevention. Now that he's stopped partying, the injuries have caught up with him. I like it.
No, it's the other way around. He had all those injuries because he was partying so much. I think there's a point where if you keep sleeping 4 hours a night because you party a lot and you're a professional footballer, I think there's a point where maybe your body can't take all of that anymore, the partying and the football side of it. And then that's when you get injuries. And maybe that's what people in France are saying. Maybe one of the reasons that he doesn't look after his body enough because he parties and because of the things he eats, maybe, or what he does, whatever. And that's why at some point those injuries are so much there. He was partying when he was in Barcelona and he was never injured compared to his time in Paris. But maybe with age now, it's harder for him to stay fit because of the combination between his lifestyle and the training and the games and the performances. I don't know.
In Spain, we say your body is passing you a bill. And I think that he's been really unlucky because he missed, World Cup quarterfinals, Zúñiga, get him injured, a World Cup in Brazil. Then he missed, as far as I can remember, Copa America 2019 as well. And he got with an injury to World Cup 2018. And he had a problem in the metatarsian before the World Cup too. Neymar's career has been, unfortunately for him, defined by injuries.
But it's really since he joined PSG. Before that in Barcelona, if you look at the games, at his injury record in Barcelona is almost non-existent. In Paris, he's played...
suspended.
Yeah, but that's not through injury. I said his injury record.
No, I know. Yeah.
But in Paris, he's played 50% of the game. So I think I don't know why, I don't know if it's just the edge or everything that we've spoken about, but it's been really unlucky as well for PSG and for him to have that, to go through that.
All right. Wow. Loads of storylines about this game. Neymar against his former club won't be one of them, at least in this first leg. There is some hope, I believe, that he might be available for the second leg. But of course, Messi, this could be, Alvaro, his last Champions League tie for Barcelona. If so, he's coming into it in some vintage form this weekend. Oof.
Como se la preparó fuera del balcón del área. Vaya chute tremendo.
A very expansive Messi, let's put it that way. Choosing when to accelerate, when to stop, when to pass, when to dribble. He wasn't perfect, but he was very active and he scored a couple of goals as well. So I think that he was running the show for Barcelona again. I think around Messi, some players are flourishing as well, and this is very important for Barcelona too. I think that the problem with Barcelona is that going forward they are more than okay right now. I wouldn't say that they are as prolific as they were when they had Neymar, Suarez, Messi together, but they are scoring a good amount of goals. But then in defense, they're having a lot of problems. It's not only the injuries of Piqué and Araujo, who, by the way, both could be in the matchday squad. In the case of Gerard Piqué, it would be if he is in the matchday squad, Koeman said that he will confirm that on Tuesday. Piqué hasn't played the game since November, so that would be a bit risky, but Piqué thinks that he can play. But Barcelona has made so many errors that led to opposition goals this season. I think that it was 6 goals that Barcelona has pretty much given away this season, and this is from Opta on the 3rd of February. That's the record in La Liga this season. They are giving away a lot of goals, and you can tell that some defenders over there, they are still not very reliable. Barcelona could field Dest, Mingueza, Lenglet and Jordi Alba against PSG. This is not a reliable defense in any case, and it's a bless for Barcelona that Neymar is not there, because he could basically destroy Mingueza or Sergiño Dest, who are so far defenders who have to prove themselves in the international scenario. So I think that the absence of Neymar changes the tire a little bit. I did believe in December that PSG was the overwhelming favorite for this game. Right now, without Neymar, and considering how all right Barcelona is doing now, I don't know what to say. I mean, Barcelona has gotten 7 wins in a row in La Liga. They are still 8 points off the pace, and Atletico has a game in hand. But Barcelona is doing very well. The only reason why there are no more compliments to them is because Atletico, they are in a tremendous form. But the team has a distinct style again. I think that despite the financial constraints, there is an understanding that the latest performances, not results, performances, are the best thing that has happened to Barcelona over the last year. And the team goes for the game. When they score one goal, they go for the second. And they have vitality as well, something that last season didn't have, because they had too many players over 30 playing. And this season they've got some youth in there. So there are some positive news about Barcelona. Pedri, Frenkie de Jong, you can tell that those are the midfielders of Barcelona for the future. Ansu Fati, when he's back, he will be very important too. The likes of Araujo, promoted from the academy, they seem to be defenders for the next 10 years. So, yeah, I would say that Barcelona gets into this game in a very good form. There is a positive feeling about the team right now, but at the same time, Barcelona has only tested themselves domestically. I want to see what they do in Europe, because when they had a heavy test in Spain against Sevilla, against Atletico, against Real Madrid, even against Juventus, they haven't been able to win. They are capable of winning the easy games, but when it comes to big victories, I can only recall one. That was a long time ago against Juventus in a game that Álvaro Morata didn't score a couple of goals because VAR exists.
Mm. Well, he was offside, but yes.
Millimeters.
Well, those
yeah, but that's true. I mean, they haven't, apart from that win against Juventus, Barcelona doesn't have any big win under their belt this season.
Interesting. Barcelona haven't gone out of the competition at this point since 2007. Could it happen this time, Rafa? What do you think?
Yeah, I think it could happen. I mean, it's a bad draw for both sides, really. I think PSG will feel that they are perhaps psychologically better equipped for this game than they were maybe a couple of years ago. I think making it to the final, being possibly a better team in the final, would have helped them. For Barcelona, I think all the things that Álvaro mentioned are huge. I mean, they are improving. They are on the up. They go into the game with a bit of new self-belief and a sense that this could be the last hurrah for Messi and this team. It's a difficult one, really difficult one to call.
Yeah, well, he could be having his future hurrahs, of course, for the other team, for PSG. PSG, who, Jules, just as we wrap this part up, correct me if I'm wrong, were they the only side in the top half of Ligue 1 this weekend to actually win?
No, Montpellier as well, no?
Oh, did they? Okay.
Yeah, but it was a very weird Ligue 1 weekend with a lot of unexpected results.
All right, and Paris Saint-Germain moving to just a point behind Lille now. Even Monaco didn't win, dropping points for the first time in 2021. All right, well, Barcelona against Paris Saint-Germain is going to dominate a lot of people's attention on Tuesday, but there's another game this evening as well, and it's a whopper as Leipzig in Budapest take on Liverpool.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
This is the Totally Football Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network.
Hello, Sevilla Ilanda, who asks Rafa, who is favourite in Liverpool-Leipzig game?
I think Liverpool are still just about favourites. I think they have more quality, especially up front. I think they've been perhaps getting results that are slightly worse than the actual performances in recent weeks. Leipzig are very solid. They are very strong defensively, so it could be a good matchup for them to maybe play on the break a little bit. But I just think over two legs, Liverpool should just about squeeze through.
Mm. Leipzig, of course, were up against English opposition in the group stages. We discussed this in Monday's Totally Show. And at the time, they were looking quite an inconsistent side under Nagelsmann, but they aren't that anymore. Only two defeats in the last 13 games across all competitions. Four straight wins they come into this fixture on, with 10 goals scored in those four matches and only one goal conceded. Also, looking back on the group stage, statistically, they were the most intense pressers of any side in the Champions League. And I'm wondering how much of a challenge that's going to be for a Liverpool side who are not looking mentally and perhaps physically as strong as they were before.
Leipzig rotated last Friday. I don't think that Liverpool ever rotates right now, or they rotate very little because they've got many absences as well. So I think that Leipzig can keep this energy in the Champions League too this time.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of, I don't want to say the word momentum, there are a lot of sort of indications that Leipzig are going into this game at a good time for themselves, especially with Liverpool's issues and Leipzig looking very solid, consistent. I would say that the game has swung towards them as far as the balance of power and the chances are concerned, but I don't think it's quite swung enough to make them favourites in my book. I still think that the amount of football that Leipzig need to play and the amount of sort of effort and hard graft they need to put on the pitch to score goals is is perhaps what separates them from being an out-and-out real superpower in European football. They don't have a Lewandowski up front. They don't have a Mo Salah, Mane or Firmino. They don't have an Erling Haaland. They're a little bit light in those positions. And if you can shut down the midfield, then there's not a lot of ways for them to score. So I think Liverpool, yes, will be put under pressure. I think Leipzig's pressing game will disrupt Liverpool's rhythm, and that's been one of the key problems for them. I think the build-up has been a lot more difficult without Van Dijk and his ability to play beyond the first pressing line. But at the same time, I think there will be spaces and there will be opportunities. It'd be interesting to see what kind of Leipzig will turn up, because by their own admission, they froze in the semi-final against PSG. In the group stage, they did much better. You felt that they had learned from it. They kind of blew it against Man United at Old Trafford, but apart from that, their performances were pretty good. So I think they might be a slightly better side than they were last year, but I still don't think it's quite enough to beat a Liverpool team that I think if they go through, would still have to be considered one of the favourites.
Really?
Irrespective of their domestic issues.
Right. Three straight defeats for Liverpool coming into this against Leicester most recently, before that Man City, and Brighton before that. They got a rubbish record on the road. 7 away defeats in this competition since March 2018. Knocked out, of course, by Atletico Madrid in last year's tournament. The same Atletico side who Leipzig then beat on neutral ground in August. A lot of things seem to point towards Leipzig, apart from the fact that they weren't European
You're
champions.
Tipping Leipzig, aren't you, Jimbo?
I'm kind
clear.
Of tipping Leipzig.
You're
Leipzig.
Really yeah, leaning pushing, on Leipzig yeah. here.
Yeah, very, very, very strongly so, actually, yeah.
We have to say that Liverpool weren't bad against Atletico last year, but I don't think that they were bad against Leicester the other day either. They just had 10 minutes in which they collapsed completely. And of course, football can be explained like this. I mean, you don't score in 70 minutes and you don't do the job, and then you have a terrible 10 minutes and you lose the game. But Liverpool can still offer long phases of good football, really. They are just not getting the results, but I don't see them. Or I can see them going back to their best in a reasonable time, definitely on time for the Champions League last 16.
It's been more long faces than long phases of late for Klopp and,
absolutely,
and co.
Yeah.
But, you know, probably, Rafa, you're right, and that they can bounce back this Tuesday evening. Anyone else got any thoughts on who's likely to go through?
I think it's 50-50. I just don't think Liverpool's defence back four, whoever plays as centre-backs, will be comfortable with all the force number nine that Nagelsmann is going to play, whether that's Olmo and Forsberg or Nkunku, and all that movement, I think could be a real issue for Liverpool. So I do think that Leipzig have a realistic chance to knock them out, though.
And I want to see how Alisson recovers, because he's been quite shaky in the last couple of games. Against Manchester City, he made a couple of mistakes, serious mistakes. And I still believe that he should have shouted a bit more. And Klopp say that as well. Say that he didn't hear him shout when he went for that ball that at the end he ended up missing. And Leicester scored a very easy open goal. So I think that Alisson has to improve his form, definitely, because he's been a differential player for Liverpool.
Well, for the moment, Leipzig, with their victory last Friday against Augsburg, still lying second in the Bundesliga, 4 points behind Bayern Munich, although Bayern have still yet to play their game from this weekend. They were off last week in Doha, Rafa, of course, claiming their 6th title in a year, the Club World Cup, in which they beat Tigres in the final. Pavard with the only goal. And there was much rejoicing. What was the German press reaction to this, Rafa?
Well, in France, they would have written Les Tigres qui pleurent, of course. But in Germany, it was mostly a reaction about, Bayern just turning up and winning. That was really the story. I mean, they didn't play particularly well. They had a few substitutions to deal with in terms of players not being available. Thomas Müller tested positive after the semi-final. He was sorely missed. There were one or two issues, no Goretzka and Martinez, they were left at home. And Boateng had to leave because of personal reasons. But this is the difference, I think. This is what separates Bayern from almost any other club in Europe, with the exception maybe of Manchester City. They seem to deal with these issues in this COVID year better than anyone else. Whether that's to do with, the gap between them and the next team in the Bundesliga being bigger than anyone else, that could be an explanation. But even in Europe, in the Champions League, or now in this Club World Cup, they're not playing particularly well, but it's just good enough to win. And you know what? You just won this. Just kind of some sort of false strength, and they're not just waiting for somebody to expose all their issues. Or is it because, you know, Bayern have so much depth that they can play at 85%, they can play with a few players out, and it doesn't hurt them as much as others? We simply don't know. I think Lazio might not be in a position to give us a definitive answer either in the next round because of their problems. But certainly it's shaping up to be another pretty solid and convincing season, which I didn't think might necessarily be the case maybe a month ago when Bayern were having a lot of bad results and actually played pretty badly in Germany.
Mm. Just on the subject of the Club World Cup in Doha, special shout out to Ronnie of Palmeiras for his penalty against Al Ahly in a third place match. Did you see this very, very special effort?
It's a mix of Pogba, Zaza, Bruno Fernandes, except that he missed at the end anyway.
But anyway, you mentioned, Rafa, the depth of Bayern, and they're about to get a bit deeper with the arrival of Upamecano from Leipzig, and that's for next season. AFC 27 says, question four, Big Raf, is the transfer of Upamecano the death knell for the Bundesliga competition? Rarely do you see the top team in other leagues sign the second team's best players.
Well, we have a problem with competitive balance in the Bundesliga. That's no news. And it's to do with the financial imbalance between Bayern and everybody else. They make about double what Dortmund make in turnover. They make about three times what Leipzig make. And the problem is, even if you would insert some special transfer clause that says, you know, Bundesliga clubs cannot sell to Bayern, or Bayern have to pay double or whatever, if that was even legal, it doesn't really change much, because in this specific case, as was the case with Lewandowski and anyone else you could mention, if he doesn't go to Bayern, he goes abroad. And Bayern keep their existing starting 11 and keep growing and keep buying players from abroad and keep getting stronger in relative terms. And the other side still lose their best players. So it's not something that's easily solvable unless you are looking for a huge influx of new money below Bayern, which right now nobody really wants and it wouldn't be legal. Or you'd find a way of redistribute the income in a way that would really boost up the teams below Bayern. But again, it's very difficult to change. So until that situation change, Bayern are almost forced to do it, because if they don't sign these guys like Werner or Havertz, they go abroad. And if they don't want to sign them back, they have to pay double the price. So it's not in their interest really to let these guys go to anyone else in Europe. But of course, in an ideal scenario, these teams would be in a better position. I mean, what you can say is that it's no longer a given that a very good Dortmund player, let's say Jadon Sancho or Erling Haaland, will necessarily go to Bayern. Dortmund have been able to keep these players a little bit longer. And when they sell them for a lot of money, which might even be too much for Bayern. So we've made some progress, but not enough in that respect.
Dortmund and probably Sancho and Haaland will be in action as well this week. They're at Sevilla on Wednesday. We'll come onto that game very, very shortly. Up next, though, it's the other Wednesday night game, Porto against Juventus.
Oh, mate, keep going. We're almost there.
Oh, the legs have gone. Pressing is hard. The weather is so mentally fatigued.
All right, lads. Already on the way down, are you? How was your view from the top? Have Liverpool peaked under Klopp? We're still undecided. And that's why when you create your own bet builder on Leipzig v Liverpool, we'll make it a risk-free £5 bet with money back as cash if it loses. Paddy Power.
Pre-match online bets only. Minimum 2 legs. Max cash refund £5. T's and C's apply. 18 plus. BeGambleAware.org.
On Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Smart Speaker, and now ad-free on The Athletic, this is The Totally Football Show with James Richardson.
All right, narrative fans, Cristiano Ronaldo is back in Portugal Wednesday night after what has been a mixed week for the old lady. Last midweek through to the Coppa Italia final with a niggly 0-0 at home with Inter. Conte and Agnelli having rows, people sticking middle fingers at each other and calling each other testicles. Then, just while Juve are celebrating, and it looks like Pirlo's nailed it, they lose to Napoli on Saturday. Penalty for Chiellini waving his arms in people's faces. Q wants a bit of love for Rino Gattuso, manager of Napoli, before we go any further, in honour of their win over Juventus, as well as his interesting facial hair. Also, points out Q, the 15th of February is 10 years since that incident with Rino and Joe Jordan. Oh, how the years fly by. Good Lord. Do you remember that day, James?
I mean, it's fairly unforgettable, as was the punditry afterwards, with Graham Souness saying he was like a little dog.
He's not the best of players anyway. He's a little dog at best, Gattuso, in my opinion. That's all he is, a little dog. Go get the ball, scuffle around. Been very good at that in the past. He's now well past his sell-by date.
I mean, he's certainly won a few things, Rino. So I think he was more than a little dog. But yeah, that was back when Milan used to be in the Champions League, I suppose. I have to see if they can get back in it this year after that defeat to Spezia. But I mean, there's a lot to unpack in that question there, James. I mean, show some love for Rino. I mean, backs against the wall, had to win this game. Certainly after going out of the cup himself, their title defence in that regard came to an end. They lost to Atalanta, so you've got the Juventus-Atalanta final coming up. And Napoli didn't play well in this game, and yet they got the win. Juventus, I think, scratching their head as to how they lost this game, particularly in the second half, where it was a rearguard action from Napoli. I mean, very attritional game for them. In fairness, they were without their two starting centre-backs, Koulibaly, Kostas Manolas, Diego Demme in midfield, Mertens still missing. But there's still a lot of attacking talent in that team, enough to do more than what Napoli did. They didn't have a single shot, I think, on target from open play. It's just that penalty which Pirlo seemed to lose his cool afterwards, really for the first time, in saying, look, if that's a penalty, then you're giving 10, 15 penalties in every game.
Would you agree with that?
Well, I kind of agree that once Chesney comes and claims the ball, I don't think Rachmani is going to get it. Now, there is you can still blow for a foul in an off-the-ball instant. But Chiellini, in reaching his arm across, I think Chiellini's just jumping. I don't think he's actually intentionally trying to put his hand in Rachmani's face. Yeah, and the point that Pirlo made afterwards is probably a fair one, which is, if Juventus had got a penalty in that circumstance, there would have been uproar. There would have been absolute outrage about it.
I love the conditional, like that never happened. But okay, anyway, so they lose that 1-1-0, unable to break down Napoli's defensive setup, which is slightly concerning about this trip to Portugal, because Porto are a team who can certainly play that way as well. Their defence is what Sergio Conceição has built that side on. We saw that against Man City in the group stages. They were so impressive at the Portuguese side in that group stage. After the initial defeat to Man City, they didn't lose another game, and I think they didn't drop any more goals either.
Yeah, but it was Marseille and Olympiacos. Do you know what I mean? I'm not sure you can draw too much from those games, because they're not good. They're not good in Portugal. They were not good against Boavista at the weekend.
Yeah,
you know,
they've drawn their last four games. I mean, you know, as Jules knows, I mean, they're trailing Sporting by what, 7 points. That defensive solidity that we saw in the Champions League, where they kept 5 clean sheets in their last 5 group stage games. I think Jules is right. Calibre of opposition needs to be taken into account. City had already qualified when they played them again. But you are right. I mean, this is Sergio Conceição's trademark. He makes them tough to beat. They aren't necessarily the kind of exciting Porto that other managers have taken into the Champions League, Jose Mourinho, for example. But Juventus have struggled when teams park the bus against them. They've had joy since the turn of the year in being a kind of counter-attacking team. When sort of opponents who fancy themselves against Juventus, who think they've got not as much talent, but they think they are talented enough to take them on, do take them on. And they've been able to break on them. I don't think that's going to happen when they play against Porto. And I think there are other Serie A sides that have shown themselves to be better at breaking down these stacked defences. Roma of late are really good at that. I think Paulo Fonseca has shown himself to be pretty good at, sort of being daring when it comes to get players behind the last line of defence and really force them back and create space in front of that defence and that sort of thing. But, you know, Juventus is going to be without Artur. I think Artur was a big reason why they started 2021 really well. They're going to be without Cuadrado. And Cuadrado has been really kind of important for Pirlo as well, because more often than not, he's the guy setting up goals for them. And I think, you know, one of the kind of criticisms at the weekend was that McKennie didn't start. McKennie, Pirlo said, wasn't fit enough to start. He hadn't been fit enough to start, I think, in the second leg of the semi-final of the Cup against Inter either. He's such an important player, particularly when it comes to doing exactly what we've just been talking about, midfield runners, sort of adding to a sense of jeopardy for opposition defences. So it is interesting. But yeah, as with Rafa saying about Bayern, typically in recent years, Juventus managers have been judged by what they've done in the Champions League. Is that different this year, given that Juventus find themselves in a real battle to retain their title? I still think the Champions League is how they're measuring themselves at the moment. And certainly with a draw like this, which on paper looks favourable, they have to match expectation and get into the quarterfinals, because as we've seen, they've regressed in Europe since the end of Allegri. You know, going out to Ajax in the quarterfinals, Lyon in the round of 16, another round of 16 defeat would, I think, lead them to seriously question where this project is going.
I would say that Porto looks very, very solid defensively, and I would say as well that Sergio Conceição is one of those very electrifying managers that if you don't work hard and all that, he will let you know, and probably you won't play for him anymore. But at the same time, I think that the best Portos have always been defined by having great strikers that can, you know, score clinically the little chances that the team could create. I remember Falcao, I remember Hulk, even Aboubakar, one season was fantastic, Mario Jardel, and I don't think that Porto has those players up front right now. I mean, we got Oliveira, we got Marega, Taremi. I think that Taremi scored 18 goals for Rio Ave last season, but I don't think that this is still a proven striker in Europe. So the problem of Porto, in my opinion, is that going forward, they are not offering that much. And against Juventus, if you have a chance, you have to score it.
Well, loads of draws for them. You mentioned four in a row last week in the Cup against Braga, when it wasn't a bus that was parked, actually, on the field. Did you see this? There was a serious injury for Braga's David Carmo. And so they drove an ambulance onto the field to pick him up, which led to one or two issues when the ambulance couldn't drive away again. It kind of broke down. So all the players had to get round the back and literally push it off the field, which is quite an extraordinary sight, especially the deep wheel ruts that were left in the turf. Conceição, by the way, giving a debut to his 18-year-old son, Francisco Conceição. He looked good, didn't he, Alvaro?
I think so, yeah. I mean, he was lively. He set up a goal that then was cancelled, I think. And didn't he provoke the penalty as well? Yeah. I think that he was definitely making the highlights of the game. And I don't know, he's quite a small guy. He seems to be quite quick, especially technical. So, I really hope that he can build up from his great debut.
Mm. Yep, absolutely. And I hope he works hard, because otherwise he'll be out, like every other player.
Absolutely.
Conceição. Right. Okay, well, that's on Wednesday, and it looks like being an intriguing game. The other clash that's on at the same time looks an absolute peach. Sevilla against Dortmund. Sevilla, who've just won 9 straight games in all competitions, scoring 18 goals, Alvaro, and conceding just one. Sevilla, who beat Barcelona 2-0 last week in the Cup. Sevilla, who also had that comedy collapse against Krasnodar, but then rescued it back in the group stages, and also lost 4-0 at home to Chelsea. But things have changed since then under Julen Lopetegui, Alvaro, yes?
I think so, yeah. This is the pinnacle of Lopetegui's project, really. This is the best moment. I mean, they are fourth on the table with 7 points difference over Real Sociedad, which I believe that they will keep until the end of the season, and they will qualify for the Champions League again. And this is key for Sevilla, because for a couple of seasons they didn't qualify for the Champions League and they didn't have Monchi. And Valencia seemed to be the team that was the fourth best in Spain, but then things happened at Valencia and Sevilla hasn't regained the fourth spot. And more importantly, I think that they are competitive in domestic football to the point that if you play against them as Barcelona, Real Madrid or Atletico, you know that it's going to be a nail-beating game and Sevilla is going to offer you a hell of a challenge. So I think that Sevilla is doing very well despite little injuries they have had. Jesús Navas, Lucas Ocampos, they are very important for them. Also Acuña, so both fullbacks, probably they won't be available. Definitely not Acuña, let's see Jesús Navas for the game against Dortmund. But the most important thing about Lopetegui is that he has instilled this philosophy of partido a partido, of Simeone, game by game. This is the only way Sevilla does right now. They don't talk about major targets. They know that they can fight for the trophies, but they go game by game. Then signings like El Papu Gómez signing go in that direction too. We want to be big. We want to settle in the Spanish royalty, top four. And I think that Papu Gómez can be a player who lifts Sevilla as well, especially in the absence of Lucas Ocampos. And there are a couple of things about Sevilla that I really like. They never lose the plot, normally. They are always keeping the structure and the plan, and they are never, you know, going mental or going crazy during the game. They are very, very stable and solid. And also they go to the games with the belief that they can win. However, there is something that I want to see if Sevilla can do, which is a remontada. Because normally when they win comfortably or they score first. But this season they have done a couple of remontadas, but against teams that are not as good, like Cádiz, Celta, Krasnodar, as you said. But if Dortmund scores first, Sevilla is not a team that will kill you every time they step in your box. I think that Sevilla are a team that need many chances to score a goal. We saw that in the Europa League last season. And this is the only thing that I think that can go against them. The fact that they are not that prolific in the opponent's box. However, as a team, collectively, they are a hell of a team now.
Wow. Is Gomez cup-tied? Can he play? Will he play?
Yeah, of course. Okay. Yeah, he can play, I believe, yeah.
Excellent. As for the visitors, Rafa, things not looking so good, hey? Sort of momentum taking them the opposite direction. Just one win in their last seven.
Yeah, another disappointing result at the weekend. 2-2 at home against Hoffenheim. Another discussion about the team just not looking right defensively, conceding stupid goals. Edin Terzic, you know, doing his best and being praised a lot, but hasn't really been able to influence things much for the better since Lucien Favre left. Maybe you could say that Dortmund are in a setup that suits them a bit better. They're a bit more aggressive, they press a bit more, they look a little bit happier, but it's come at the price of still being just as bad defensively. So the good news is that he won't be doing this much longer, Edin Terzic. I mean, it was always, I think, unlikely that he would be given the job on a full-time basis, but one of the worst-kept secrets has been at last revealed. Marco Rose from Borussia Mönchengladbach will indeed come in at the end of the season to take over the other Borussia, at which point Dortmund hope that they'll still be, of course, in the Champions League, because the way things are going, both Gladbach and Dortmund might miss out. And the teams at the top right now are Bayern, Leipzig, of course, but then you've got Frankfurt and Wolfsburg in the third and fourth position, respectively. So a real fight for that fourth spot, and Dortmund need to really hope that, in a strange way, that Rose announcement maybe will give him some kind of push to move forward. It sounds strange, but I guess they're hoping that they'll have the same effect that Leipzig had when they announced that Nagelsmann was going to come in early. It didn't hurt the season.
But they were being coached by Ralf Rangnick at the time rather than Edin Terzic. No?
That is fair.
This is the issue with Dortmund. Were they not a little hasty in dismissing Lucien Favre and giving an interim manager the job for 6 or 7 months? You know, I mean, it's a long time to basically put your trust in a number two, you know, when there's so many games to play, so many points at stake.
They were hoping for the Flick effect, of course. And I think under Favre, it was no longer viable to go forward. The problem, I think, was not being too hasty. The problem was that they were in a position where they were always looking just to somehow get through that last season with Favre. They knew that the change was coming. They knew that Favre was not going to sign a new deal. I think they had earmarked Rosa pretty early on to be his successor. But then what you do in that last year when it doesn't work out? I think they try to tell themselves it's going to be fine, it's going to be fine, it's going to be fine. Eventually, I think they realize that they can no longer pretend that everything's going to be okay under Lucien Favre. The fact that it hasn't worked out that well under Terzic is another story, really. But I don't think he can accuse them of being hasty in getting rid of Lucien Favre, because it was 2.5 years of doubts, really.
I suppose I mean hasty in this season's context rather than his contract cycle.
Yeah, I mean, they got rid of him because they were worried that Champions League might not be the outcome. And of course, that those worries haven't been allayed by his successor. But I don't think you can really blame them. I think the team, certainly the fans, they'd sort of lost faith in Favre at that point.
Well, if it was a gamble, it certainly hasn't paid off for now. 6 points adrift, as are Borussia Mönchengladbach, 2-2 with Hoffenheim at the weekend. Sancho and Haaland both scoring. Haaland, who, by the way, is still joint top scorer in the Champions League this year, even though he missed the final two group stage games for Dortmund. With players like that in their lineup, they're always going to pose a threat. What does anybody think? Sevilla to put out Borussia Dortmund to increase the misery?
I think that those two names you mentioned are key as well. I don't think that Sevilla has players of that caliber, like Jadon Sancho and Haaland. But I've seen Sevilla this season playing top teams, and they are putting such a fight. They are capable of keeping the scoreline low as well. And Chelsea was the only bad exception this season. But you can argue as well that both teams were rotating. In my opinion, Lopetegui made a mistake there because it makes a difference coming first of your group in the Champions League. And he pretty much refused to do that. Collectively, Sevilla is fantastic, but they don't have players like Haaland or Sancho, that's for sure.
But they don't have players like Messi either, and they beat Barcelona.
Yeah, that's true. Exactly. Mm.
Wow, interesting. All right. A quick random tweet from Brian Doyle, who says, can we get an update on how Edgar Davids is getting on as Olhanense manager in the Portuguese second division? James, you're all over this story.
Yeah, James has been following it since day one, really.
Well, I mean, I was watching Porto, of course, at the weekend. Right. So I just thought I would you know, sort of skip down a few mm-hmm. divisions. And they had 2-2 draw, James, against Jose Mourinho's hometown club, Vitória Setúbal.
Who are actually leading the second division at the moment. So this is an impressive result. In fact, I'm right in thinking that they've only had one defeat since Edgar Davids took over. And crucially, he hasn't been sent off again since he was for brawling in his debut game.
Yeah, and I suppose he'll be livid, James, after taking the lead in the 87th minute, which a great second half substitution from Edgar Davids. I think really showing the kind of, you know, how much he learned from Marcello Lippi whilst he was at Juventus. You know, Claudio Major coming on, but they then succumbed. 94th minute penalty from Zaquinha. Right. I mean, he must be... I wouldn't have liked to have been in the dressing room after conceding that, James.
There you go, Brian. Thanks for that, James. Right, up next, Europa League.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
You're listening to The Totally Football Show, sponsored by Paddy Power.
Woo! Europa League. 32 sides involved still. Never mind the quality, feel that width. 5 British teams. You got Spurs at Wolfsburger. That game is going to be played somewhere else, though. I think, is it Turin, that game? Jose Mourinho, Spurs manager, has never not won this tournament in the same way that Big Sam has never before been relegated. We shall see anyway, but it's quite a record he's got. Leicester are away at Slavia Prague. Arsenal take on Benfica. Tony McHugh writing in to say Benfica are having a terrible time of it. Poor management. 3 managers in the last year. They're currently lying fourth, 10 points behind Sporting. We'll see if their season improves Thursday night against the Gunners. Antwerp, meanwhile, are taking on Rangers. And then in Budapest, one of the more intriguing ties of this round of 32 in the Europa League, Alvaro, as Real Sociedad take on Man United. Woof! A Man United team.
Only one thing. I think that they play in Torino.
Oh, Torino. This one's in Turin.
I think so, you're absolutely right.
This is in Turin. So this was in Turin. Possibly the one I said was in Turin was in Budapest, and so on and so forth. But the crux of the matter is, it's Real Sociedad against Man United. David Silva against Man United. Nacho Monreal against Man United. Januzaj against Man United. Alvaro.
What a team they've got, Real Sociedad. I mean, some of them, they are veteran players, but they still have the quality. And I think Real Sociedad is in a decent moment right now. Imanol Alguacil, after the game against Getafe, he was radiant because their team won. They didn't concede the goal. And he was very happy with the defense. I think that this has been the issue for Real Sociedad during the season. And Alexander Isak, the Swedish man, he can't stop scoring right now. I mean, since William Jose left, he feels that he is the official number 9 of the team, and he's doing the job so well. At the same time, Oyarzabal, who seemed a week ago that he was set to miss the tier against Manchester United, or definitely the first leg, he played against Getafe the other day and he was all right. So, yeah, this is a good moment for Real Sociedad. This is probably my favorite tier of the Europa League, because both teams are pretty good attacking. One of them has a lot of power force up front. The other one, Real Sociedad, plays attractive football. And I do believe that, Manchester United may be the favorite. In fact, in their precedents against Real Sociedad, they always beat them in Europe or they were comfortable against them. But this time is different. I think that Real Sociedad comes in a great moment too.
All right. But if they're an open, if they play open attacking football, that might be exactly the kind of opponent that Man United enjoys playing against. Statistically, United actually haven't won in their last 9 meetings against Spanish opposition. They have impressed on the road this season, except for, at West Brom this weekend and that time in Istanbul. In fact, generally in Europe, not so good away from Old Trafford. So we shall see.
When the draw was made, we already said this is the tie of the round, for sure, without a doubt. I think it'd be tough for United. And if they don't play better than they did against West Brom, I think Real Sociedad could knock them out. Maybe it's down to the experience, though. And this is a Real Sociedad, apart from, you know, some individuals in that squad, including the manager, for all of them, this is all new. Whereas I think United are obviously more used to those kind of big games.
They have that Europa League DNA. Mm. You got Milan taking on Red Star. Milan, who, as James mentioned at the start of today's show, went down to the shock of the week. Or was it on Saturday, as high-flying Spezia beat them 2-0. What a goal from Bastoni.
Uff. Finalmente parte Stevez, il tocco per Bastoni, la costruzione rete! Bastoni con il sinistro trafigge!
And a local lad.
A local lad. In fact, both of their goals came from Spezzini, kids from Spezia, Giulio Maggiore being the other one. And you mentioned it, is it a shock? Yeah, it's probably the biggest night in their history since the firemen of Spezia won the league in the kind of
although they weren't
tail end
firemen.
Of the Second World War. Right. They weren't actually firemen.
No. So the thing was, because there was a war on.
Save this for Galazzo, James.
All right, then. So anyway, back to you.
Okay. But, I mean, they had beaten Napoli and Naples. They'd knocked Roma out of the cup, even though when they were in the lead, Roma knocked themselves out by making a 6th substitution, which you're not allowed to do. And last week, they beat Sassuolo at the Mappe Stadium. But, I mean, this is the best season a newly promoted side has had since Chievo, back at the turn of the century, when Chievo were kind of top of the table around this time of that season, or certainly in Champions League contention. And, you know, no one really expected it in terms of the squad that Spezia had. They've got like 18 players on loan, you know, and talented players, you know, from youth academies at Inter, Atalanta and Milan. But it's all about the manager, really. You know, we've mentioned the manager who has had 3 promotions in the last 3 years with 3 different clubs, from Serie D to C, from C to B, from B to A. And this would be like another one of them keeping them up or even making them a mid-table side. It's pretty extraordinary. But they gave Milan the hardest night they've had, I think, certainly this season, along with the Atalanta game. And now it feels like a pivotal week or 2 weeks for Milan, because not only have they lost the lead in Serie A, they have to go to Belgrade to play Red Star in the Europa League on Thursday. A pretty historic game in the history of Milan, if you go back to Sacchi's era and then winning back-to-back European Cups. Famous night at the Maracanã in the fog, or famous afternoon as it was. And then they've got the Milan derby on Sunday, which will see Lukaku and Ibrahimovic come up against each other. But it's a tight turnaround because it's a early afternoon game, that one, so they won't have a lot of time to rest and recover. And then they've got Red Star again at San Siro, and then Roma. So, I mean, this is where I think Milan's... Okay, they didn't start the season with the objective of winning the title. They want to get into the Champions League again, but it's a major stress test for them, I would say.
I think they got pretty comfortable there in first place. Not in the sense that they relaxed too much, but certainly this weekend they didn't have a single shot on target in that game with Spezia, which is worrying for their manager. The Spezia boss, Vincenzo Italiano, is, of course, the same fellow who Aurelio De Laurentiis wants to bring in at season's end to replace Gattuso down at Napoli, so we'll see how their campaign continues. But
born in Germany, I'm surprised Rafa's not claiming him.
Karlsruhe.
I'll
wait for the result.
So this weekend, though, the derby, as you mentioned, is Ibrahimovic up against Lukaku again. And we've been so busy with the Europa League and that there's not been a lot of focus on that, but that's going to be quite a rematch.
It is. I mean, it was very ugly scene back in that cup quarterfinal, which, you know, went on for a long time, this kind of verbal exchange between the two of them. The Italian Football Federation opened the investigation. That investigation is ongoing. Zlatan has been interviewed by the kind of Sporting Disciplinary Commission, putting that case together. I think Lukaku is due to speak to them this week as well. So we'll learn a little bit more. I think, you know, sort of by the end of this week, maybe the Italian Football Federation will have all the facts and then we'll proceed on them. But yeah, I mean, that has already become part of this derby's folklore. I mean, there's a big mural in the city of Milan. I think on maybe either one of the walls near San Siro or at the stadium, with them going head to head. I imagine, you know, one day in the future we'll see it as a choreography in one of the curve before one of the games.
Yeah, maybe this weekend. Who can say? Who can say? Anyway, huge games coming up for Milan. Elsewhere, just to round up one or two of the other games in the Thursday night Europa League lineup, Daniel Greenfield says, how about some love for our forgotten Swiss friends? Rafa, Jean-Pierre Nsame and Christian Fasnacht at Young Boys, who bang goals in for fun pretty much every match, says Daniel. Have they got any chance against Leverkusen? Daniel, if this helps, says that he thinks they have a fighting chance to provide an upset. Thanks.
Well, I'd agree with that. I mean, Leverkusen are famously, infamously inconsistent. It's part of their DNA. They don't seem to ever find the kind of resilience and fortitude to see through a whole season. They have quality, but even at last weekend, you know, we're 2-0 up against the second worst team in the Bundesliga. And what was the outcome? A 2-2 draw against Mainz. And they would have been very lucky to win. So, Leverkusen squad-wise should be one of the favourites to win the competition. But in terms of their recent history and application and also how they crumbled against Inter in the same competition not long ago, yeah, I think Young Boys have a chance.
All right.
Young Boys, Young Boys.
Ba-da-da-da-dum, ba-da-dum. Granada are taking on Napoli, which I reckon looks like an interesting game. And also, Jules... How about that Lille Ajax, the Ligue 1 leaders, Lille?
Ooh, the Sven Botman derby.
Taking on the side 6 points clear in the Eredivisie Ajax. Ajax, who haven't lost in 10 matches. Jules.
Yeah, but one of the reasons why they've been so good is because Sebastian Haller has played so well since leaving West Ham to join Ajax. And the fact is, they forgot to put him on the list, so no Sebastian Haller in those two games, which is, at that level, come on, you've got one job, just one job, yeah. And then...
That was the same week as Onana as well, wasn't it?
So, yeah, Onana is, you know, there was that suspension because of, apparently he took the pills of his wife to lose weight, you know, as some do. I think Colo Touré was another one before. But yeah, so I on paper, it's not just on paper, it's a hell of a game because Lille, although they only drew this weekend, they're still top of the table in Ligue 1. They've been great all season. We saw them against Milan where Yazici scored the hat-trick. They were so good against Celtic as well, even if they lost in Glasgow. But so they can certainly compete, I think, with Ajax over the two legs. And Ajax have been fantastic. As you said, I think Haller is a huge blow for them, though. And I think Lille can take advantage of it. And Sven Botman, who, funnily enough, has never played for Ajax first team, although he was there at the academy and then went to Heerenveen and went to Lille. And there's no doubt that he will leave this summer for a top, top club for a lot of money.
Wow. What a smorgasbord of continental delights awaits us over the next three evenings. Thank you so much for illuminating that list of fixtures with your knowledge. We've got more of that kind of thing coming up next week when we look to the next round of fixtures and look back on these ones and all that sort of thing. All the usual thing on your Totally Football Show European edition. For now, it's many, many thanks to Alvaro and James and Julian and Rafa for being with us today.
Thank you.
Thank you, James.
No.
Thanks.
And you, listener, I do hope you'll join us next Tuesday. For now, from all of us here, it's goodbye.
You've been listening to the Totally Football Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network. Keep up to date with everything Totally at thetotallyfootballshow.com and follow us at The Totally Show on Twitter and Insta. Check out all of the Athletic's football podcasts on Apple, Spotify and all the usual places or listen ad-free on the Athletic app. The Totally Football Show is a Muddy Knees Media production and sponsored by Paddy Power.
The Athletic.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10. Place your first bet on any game and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.